Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for the intro. I am especially interested in our show today, as we will discuss, at least in part, how each of us contains a zone of genius hungering to make an impact. The show will be filled with insight, tangible steps to become the kind of person that you really want to be. And our special guest is really one of the people I'm finding that I respect extremely highly, maybe one of my most respected people, and it's Kameen Samuel. And Kameen's intelligence and wisdom and experience are just so worth paying attention to. Check her bio. Her official bio kind of reads this way. Kameen Samuel is an international rapid transformation business coach, author, speaker. She's been on hold for our show for a month and a half because she's been authoring a book. She has the distinction of being the U.S. Navy's first female African-American helicopter pilot, which we will talk about. She has a background in information technology, web development, online merchandising, and has served as a vice president of a global website operation at a billion-dollar company. Bottom line, Kameen specials in transforming stuck beliefs and behaviors to accelerate growth and high performance. In fact, I'm so impressed with Kameen that I have set a date for personal coaching regarding my future just to do this next week. And my future at 71, yes, 71. I turned 71 yesterday, so I call myself officially I'm an old person. After 70, you're allowed to call yourself an old person. And so Kameen is going to guide me in my old age. So without further introduction, let's bring on author, speaker, business and personal coach, Kameen Samuel. Kameen, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Well, thank you, Charlie, and happy birthday to you. I hope you're still celebrating.
I am. I had a choice of going out to dinner last night or watching my son play baseball, so you can guess what I did.
How did Austin do?
Austin had a really good game. Unfortunately, our team lost its eighth straight, and we were in first place, and now we're battling just to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But such is sport. Now, Kameen, to start this off, it seems to me, as we have chatted and met on several occasions, you were in the business of non-traditional thinking, almost non-linear thinking. It's sort of gestaltish. And you not only challenge barriers of contemporary thought, but you have actually overcome a significant barrier in the military. And you know, I don't know how many times you get asked it, but it's really an intriguing question. I want to know all about how you became the first African-American woman to become a helicopter pilot in the U.S. Navy. I can't imagine that journey. That had to be really quite a challenging journey for you.
It was, to some degree, and at the same time, it's hindsight. Let it be a little softer than it was. You know, I forget the days that I cried myself to sleep every day, you know, getting my commission. But it really came
Let's stop right there. Why were you crying yourself to bed every day?
It was something that I was not the type of person that you would have thought would have gone into the military or be a pilot. It wasn't something I had wanted to do since I was, you know, five. It was an adult decision. Second semester, senior year of college, I decided to go in, and I originally said no to aviation when they, you know, asked me about it. And I decided, you know, it was really a God moment that had me change that, where I had turned down, and I said, I just want to go Supply Corps in the Navy. I wanted to see the world, so I knew I wanted to go in and be of service. About 2 months after I made that decision, I was on our senior trip, and I was walking down Myrtle Beach, and a formation of helicopters flew overhead, and I said, really, God? And I called my recruiter. And I called my recruiter, and I said, hey, what are the chances of switching my package? And he said, I'll call you back. Called me back in 20 minutes. He says, your package is switched. Your reporting date for aviation officer candidate school is this date. You know, your enlistment date is this. And I'm like, wait. I didn't say I just wanted to know what the chances were. But as, you know, as things happen, I was on my way. And so it was, you know, I am so grateful for the opportunity to have done that. But I was not an athlete. So I had remedial PT constantly. There were only a few women in general down there at the time. And so I was isolated away, you know, and in a strange land with people I didn't know, and not very tough back then.
Not what back then?
Not very tough as a human being. I wasn't.
Oh, you weren't really? I mean, just the demands of becoming a pilot in the Navy is extremely difficult, isn't it?
Yes. So I learned a lot, and my character got shaped quite a bit.
What kinds of things did you learn from that, Kameen?
I learned so much discipline. I learned things about discipline that most people would take for granted. The ability to stay still was one of the things that I had to learn, where, you know, even if a fly or a bee lands on you, you cannot move. You know, we were not allowed to move. I also learned that my identity, whatever I thought my personality and identity was up until that point, you know, was taken away in service to us learning how to be in the military, take orders, follow through. And so those are some just core characteristics I learned, in addition to learning how to fly and learning everything I could about aviation, everything I could about being in the service, so to speak.
How did those character traits, how have they served you over the long haul?
That's such a great question. I think it shaped me most in the ability to realize that there are different levels of priority. I'm working with some Army personnel who are transitioning. I created a class on transitioning to success.
Oh, really?
For them. And
Armed Service personnel?
Yes. And because I like to say I failed coming out of the military. And so I don't want anybody else to fail coming out. And, you know, what I learned was that grit, that stick-to-itiveness, that perseverance, the ability to continue to try over and over again.
Boy, that really is, that's such a message today. I think so many of our youth, instead of going to college, would be better off serving 4 years in the military and then going to college just for that discipline and that idea of accomplishing, setting a goal and learning how to accomplish it, where we just go into college just sort of, it's a party routine. You know, it's really not about conditioning and getting prepared to live a life.
I actually think just 2 years would be great. Everyone served 2 years. That would give them the discipline, give them the ability to think in terms of team. That was one of the hardest things I found when I went from the military into corporate, was there wasn't the same concept of team and taking care of each other and thinking about someone other than yourself was such a huge challenge for me to adjust to.
And in the military, you're not just thinking of someone other than yourself. There's a sense in which you're also knowing that your behaviors are, you are responsible to other people for your behaviors. You're not just responsible to yourself and your commanding officer, that you're responsible to your team as well. Is that, would that not be correct?
Absolutely. And you're responsible depending on what you're doing in the military. You know, if I'm flying a helicopter, you know, I have another pilot with me. I have one or two crewmen with me as well in the back. And, you know, we're a unit, and the ability to communicate and over communicate is another thing that I learned in the military that isn't taught the same way out in the civilian world.
Boy, no wonder you and your husband made such a good match. You know, your husband, for our listeners, Mark Samuel, was sort of my mentor in coaching and team building, and he is all about accountability on teams. And so I bet you guys really meshed on that concept, and you were able to provide a whole new window of thought for him in that process.
Well, we get along so well, but he was not in for, he did not like the military. He's all about peace. It's not that he's against the military. It's just he's about peace. And I had to explain to him when we met that it's not that I'm for war. I'm actually for peace. I'm just willing to fight for peace. And
yeah.
So it's just a different perspective of it.
Well, it's just something I do happen to know, that's, you know, I probably know two more than most people. I know another helicopter pilot who was in the Marines. And I just have, you know, just those machines, to be able to fly those machines seems incomprehensible. I mean, I don't get it. You know, just moving this stick around. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
It was fun. It was definitely fun to do. And I was also a flight instructor and a maintenance check pilot. So being able to help other people learn how to fly and to take that craft and be able to go out into the fleet and do really well is something that, you know, I think that it was fun to be able to really help people in that way.
Well, as we transition, that seems to me to be a great transition in that you were able to take what you learned in the Navy and put that into business and into personal life of teaching other people ideas, concepts of teams, of considering the importance of others, of developing a strong sense of self. All of that, you know, the linkage is just obvious, isn't it?
I like to say that I've been a coach since I was seven. my dad would probably say, you know, she's been bossing me around, telling me what to do since then.
Now, I thought you were the introvert. You're bossing your dad, the introvert bossing your dad around?
Oh, yeah. I like to say I'm a situational extrovert.
Right? I love that. I've never heard that term. That's a great term, a situational extrovert. I think maybe I can identify with that.
Absolutely.
You know,
I have been coaching people and really helping people, mentoring them. I've always believed in people getting to whatever that next level is in their life.
Well, I know you're sought after and you're highly respected. My wife, who is an executive coach, just, you know, thinks, you know, just so highly of you, and says you're one of the most intelligent consultants that she's worked with. And just to give, let's break our listeners in to something you told me in one of our recent conversations that I've heard bits and pieces about this, but you made it such a strong statement that I would love to get your feedback on it. And you made a comment to me that you felt our time in COVID offers the most creative times in history. That's really a bold statement. Can you elaborate how this time in COVID is offering the most creative times in history?
Absolutely. I really see that. It really lights me up when I think about this being the most creative time in history, because we have to recreate everything. We have to recreate our world. However we were doing things, it's an opportunity for us to see them differently. On the first days when the U.S. shut down, I asked all of my clients three questions. The first one was, how is COVID-19 here to bless you? And because I have a blessing orientation to life as well as a learning orientation to life. So if it's here to bless me, I'm going to kind of go up the emotional scale. I'm going to have access to greater creativity as I think of what's happening to me. The second question is, if this is an answer to an unconscious, unspoken prayer, what would that have been? And many people, you know, are taken aback by that question, because we are co-creators in this. And so many people said, well, I don't know how I would have created it. And because I work with clients over time, I will say, well, remember last year when you said, I don't want to go to my job anymore, I hate going into the office, or I hate, you know, doing this. And they're like, oh, yeah, I did say that. And I like to let them know that, you know, the universe is always listening. So it is that co-creative nature. And the third question is, so if it was an unspoken prayer, what is it that you're awakening to in your life and in your business? And so the first 2 weeks of the COVID shutdown were much more expansive for my clients, because that's what we were focused on. What are you awakening to? What would you like to create now? How are you going to have to think differently in what you do, whether it's my clients who are brick and mortar, it's my professors who are at colleges who were up and running before the colleges were even ready they were able to just keep going because we were able to teach on Zoom and I walked them through the whole platform. And so it's a beautiful time if we think of it from a co-creative and a creativity standpoint. We need new ways to filter businesses, airplanes, theaters. We need to improve platforms on how we collaborate. It means that, you know, people, my husband used to be on the road 80 to 85% of the time, so he's home. We had to, you know, co-create that and up-level our Wi-Fi here, because both of us were on at the same time. So that's what I mean by this being the most creative time in history. It is it's an absolute beautiful time for us to rethink what we want to do with our lives.
Boy, you know, no one, I have not heard anybody put it on such a grand scale as that. We all are, well, we have to know movie theaters are different and restaurants are different and shopping is different and meetings and family gatherings are different, but you're taking it to a whole different level, and the level of purpose and function in life. What am I all about? That this is calling for me. I have an opportunity to recreate what my life looks like in this new economy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what I'm also struck by, Kameen, is your prescience that you were asking these questions after only 2 weeks to a month. I mean, these are questions that are really clear now, several months down the road, but you saw it coming right away.
Yeah. For me, again, it's clear. Like, I could see it even in the kids in our neighborhood, the children to our home who are like, we've given you time to fix our education system. Now you're stuck with me, and you are really stuck with me.
And the kid saying, I'm stuck with you too. So,
well, the fathers had to do, gym and, you know, I could see their eyes light up because now they had the parents home.
Oh.
So if you look at it from creativity, it allows us to not go to, I mean, it doesn't mean that, we're not going to feel sad or grief or all of those emotions. It's how long do we stay in those before, and my clients know, I'm like, okay, what do we want to create? I get that you're feeling that way. And there's another side to this. What is it that you want now? And that keeps us moving forward in our life.
Do you get, what are some of the responses you get, Kameen? You know, when you throw that at people, what kinds of, is there a general, or is it all really specific to each individual?
Well, I think everybody has felt a bit of the grief of, a lot of, about half of my clients are extroverts. So I was dealing with different things over the last 6 months with them versus my introverts. My extroverts really felt trapped, felt imprisoned, and it was
and
really
about... And that is 75% of the population.
Yes. Whereas the introverts are like, woohoo, make me stay home.
Yeah, as I've been saying, I've been preparing for these days all my life.
Yes, all my life. I love the fact that when I go to a restaurant now, people are not so close to me. So I found it very creative what they, we have a lot of restaurants here and how they moved out into the street and they're still up and running. And so this is, how people react. It's less, I want to honor wherever their reaction point is. And this is kind of the difference between coaching and therapy, whereas coaching really is focused on the future versus really staying in the past and how you're feeling. It's only in service to the future that I will go there. And I'll honor their emotions and honor what they're going through with great love and great listening, and keep them moving towards what they say they want.
As I'm looking over your questions, that you began with, I think those are just three powerful questions. How is this a blessing to you? So you have to think, I like that blessing instead. How has this upended your life? What opportunities has this shown you? And what new things can you do in your life? I like this. How has it answered your unconscious prayer? And for non-religious people, it's your, your unconscious desires. It's the same.
Yeah, same, and thoughts.
Yeah, unconscious desires and thoughts, prayers. And then what have you learned from it? That really is those really are three, they set you up for a future orientation. They set you up to say, okay, what am I going to do next? Do they not?
Yes, they do. It's the momentum that we want to keep moving forward on in our lives so that we are, we have a purpose, a vision for our life, that we are, how can I use my gifts and abilities? What did I want more of in my life? And how can I use this time to focus on that? Most of my clients have been busy during this period of time, not slowing down. So we had to deal with even some of that difference. And so I'm all about that moment, that forward momentum.
We live in such difficult times now, and not only do we have COVID in the economy to deal with, we have social unrest, social, distress. These are as tough a times, certainly, as those of us living now. We're in as tough a times as we've ever faced, and this is a great challenge not only to our country, but as you and I are focusing on this, but it's a great challenge to the individual. You know, what can you do to make your life and your family's life better?
Yeah, and I want to say that because my clients, if they're listening to this, they'll know that Kameen's not going to let that slide. Because they know me really well.
Good. I don't want you to let it slide. I stated it softly. Not sure where you were on it.
It's more. So I don't see it as difficult times. I see them as interesting times. It's an interesting time to be alive on this planet right now when we have all of this going on. If we call it difficult, it can pull us down emotionally into, you know, if you look at a ladder, and my mentor, colleague, and friend, Steve Chandler, calls it the ladder of consciousness. At the bottom of the ladder is grief and worry and anger, and at the top of the ladder is joy and creativity and love. When we call it difficult times, we can be stuck in that difficultness versus interesting. It leaves us some space to create. And many times, as I mentioned with my clients, they may come to me with grief on that day. I was working with someone earlier who was feeling grief and disconnection from something that she was creating. And I'm not trying to get her to the top of the ladder of love and creativity. I just want her to go from grief to worry.
To the next rung on the ladder.
And move up. So I'm very careful with my words so that we are speaking expansion. We leave room for creativity. We leave room for how is the social unrest going to help us in the future? Well, just the dialogues are better. Things that had been hidden before are out in the open. You know, how is the pandemic, you know, here to serve us? Well, we found that, you know, there's a large subset of our nation that needs better health care and improved circumstances, and we needed to fix some things. And so that's why I'm really particular about words.
Well, you know, and as you should be, and I really like that alternative to difficult, from difficult to interesting. And it, you know, the word that is used so frequently, but I think because it's so overused, it's not as meaningful, but that is opportunity. You look at this as opportunity. Opportunity for what? But interesting, I can latch on to interesting. You know, I can grab hold of that. That's something that's tangible, that is not demanding too much from me. Like opportunity is a demand from me. That I need to do something. Interesting is not a demand. It is an invitation to look at things from a different perspective.
Yes, it's a co-creative space that we can just sit in. We don't have to do anything with. We can listen. We can just be present with. Is there something for us to do? There are a lot of other questions that we can ask ourselves in that space. It's interesting. How can I be of service? What am I awakening to this day? That's the space without moving into action. This is an opportunity. I have to do something. It's like the space to, like, what's mine? What's mine to do right now?
Are you writing a book on this, Kameen?
I'm always writing a book.
Well, this could get mileage. Look, we need to take a break, and then I've got so much more to talk to you about, but we need to take a quick break, and then we'll come right back. We'll be right back. Am I overspeaking the microphone or the sound?
You're good now.
Oh, I'm good now. So I don't know if you caught that, but I can tell you once again, this is the next chapter with Charlie, and I'm Charlie Hedges. And I am here with an extra special guest, Kameen Samuel, who is business coach, life coach, author, speaker, besides being the first female African-American helicopter pilot for the U.S. Navy. But that was interesting talk. But she has such a different, radically different view of COVID, the results of COVID. How does it bless you? How do we find it interesting? How can we still serve humanity and make the world, our friends, ourselves better people? And we are going to continue with that discussion. Kameen, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Charlie. It's so great to be here.
Oh, you know, and it's funny, like we did, you know, so I think our audience knows that I generally chat with my guests beforehand, and hardly, I don't think any of these things we're talking about came up in our chats.
Nope.
But like you said, you and I never have to worry about stuff to talk about. I'm going to change gears a little bit, but I want you to reflect back on interesting, because times shape who we are, and these are interesting times. Interesting times shape interesting people, as somehow difficult times or suffering times will make us better people as we come out of it with the kind of attitude that you're talking about, with this positive, what did I learn from it? Now, I recently read a statement from an activist priest, Henry Nouwen, who is not alive now, but he served, handicap is not the right word, but he served, you know, kids with special needs, and he was in a community, that's where he lived in his community. And he wrote this statement that I really grabbed onto. He says, we never know the wine we are becoming while we are being crushed like grapes. We never know the wine we are becoming while we are being crushed like grapes. Does that quote mean anything to you, or is that just me?
I love that quote. I really love that quote because you know, the times when I've been crushed like grapes, I had to have a higher vision that I could survive this. And it reminds me of when I was getting out of the military. I said earlier that I failed coming out of the Navy. I had wanted to always be in business for myself, and so I left the Navy at 9 years to be in business. That business failed miserably for a bunch of reasons. And there was a 3-day period when I received the bankruptcy notice, the foreclosure of two homes notice, and an IRS audit in a 3-day period.
In 3 days?
3 days.
How are you not a drug addict today?
Well, I actually, it was, you know, even worse. You know, I had to decide in that moment. I remember during that period, I went into the kitchen and I looked across the room and there were some knives. And I had to choose in that moment, do I survive this? And I realized that I had actually created the bankruptcy and all of my financial trouble in my mind first, and rehearsed it for the previous 14 months. So I knew that if I continued thinking about those knives, that there would be a momentum of its own. And so when I think of that quote, as you just said, it's for me, I had no idea why I needed to go through that. What was the purpose? And a lot of it was to let go of who I was and to create kind of who I truly am, my authentic self, and get connected with that and let go of the stuff and the ego and the things that I made myself to be, to find myself. And but I could not, I would not have had the vision of the life that I have created today back then. I just needed to get through one breath at a time, really.
What was the turning point that you felt, okay, I'm going to be okay. I can work my way out of this. I can co-create my way out of this. What was it that made the turn for you that helped you make that turn?
You know, Charlie, that's such a great question because it's not an event, it's a choice. I had to choose to live through that. And every day when I made that choice that I'm never going to entertain that thought again about ending my life, I had to really own that as a choice and figure out, okay, if I got into this with my own mind, then there's a way to get out of it with my own mind too. And it became a quest for me of how do I choose different thoughts? How do I think differently? Who are the people that I want to learn from? And that's really a lot of the work that I do with my clients today. If they're going into, you know, a negative future fantasy about something going wrong, it's like you realize, and they always laugh at, you know, look at me strange when I say this, you're a moment away from freedom. You're just one thought away from being free. And they look at me and I'm like, because I know what it means to make that choice to not think that thought again. Does that make sense?
That makes absolute sense. I mean, I believe we did talk about this already, but it's the Bob De Niro scene in The Mission.
In The Mission.
Where he's carrying all of his armor up the top of the cliff and he can't make it. And Jeremy Irons cuts off all the weight and he can make it to the top, but he had to lose everything to make it to the top. And that, you know, to me that was the message anyway. And I thought that was such a powerful illustration, and that's kind of what you're getting at, is that I think, you know, please correct me, but that we can have all these negative thoughts, but when we finally make a conscious choice that we are not going to be ruled by those, then there is a sense of freedom that occurs, that we are no longer under the reign of this tyranny.
Yes. And it really is an opportunity for us to think that it's not that we won't have those negative thoughts. It's not that I never had the thought again. It's, do I add energy to that thought? Do I pay attention to that thought? We can allow our thoughts to simply be like ticker tapes on the television screen. Just to pass by, notice them. See, oh, there's a friend. there's my old friend telling me that I can't do something, or, you know, challenging me in some way, calling me names even. But the work I do with people, especially in some of the hypnotherapy work I do with people, it's really to help us rewire our brain. So our ego thinks it's protecting us. So if I don't make that part of me wrong, but I rewire my thinking and I choose new thoughts and choose new direction when it shows up, that gives me more freedom, more openness to do something different in any given moment.
That is so true. And you bring on something that's really a subject that's very, very close to my heart, and that's our ego, and it's called the small self or the false self. But it's that self that needs adulation, acquisition, accomplishments, all of those to fulfill it. And it is, you know, in the mystics that I read, they call it the liar, that is not the true self. The true self is found wholly in something different, or the large self, ever, you know, what language we want to use. But that ego is, you know, in the mystical tradition, that ego is the most dangerous enemy that we have.
Well, so going back to what I said, it's like I like to think of it, the ego is trying to protect us.
It is, absolutely.
And so if I understand that, I don't have to buy into what it's telling me. I can watch it come in and not own whatever it's trying to say, so that that's, you know, the ability to not attach to it is what I do a lot of work with people on, so that they have great, it's all about freedom. And it's the freedom to be themselves, the freedom to, like with that last question, what are you awakening to in your life and in your business, going to the zone of genius, which is from Gay Hendricks' work in The Big Leap. It's really this ability to say, I'm at my best when I'm doing what? And how do I move into when I'm at my best more and more? What are the things that I'm doing in my life that enliven me such that I'm focused on that? Yes, the ego, the false self may come in and try to protect me, but I don't have to buy into that.
You know what I had somebody tell me, Kameen, is that to help dismiss that protection from the ego is to first say to the ego, thank you. Thank you for doing the job. Thank you for trying to protect me. But as I'm growing and maturing, I'm realizing that service is no longer necessary. There was a time when that was really necessary. I want to thank you for that, but I'm not going to heed that. And that was a safe way out for me, is to actually thank the ego for trying to protect me, but say your services are not needed.
Yes, and some of the work that I do, especially with the younger selves, are when we heard those messages that I'm not good enough, I'm not enough, I'm different, therefore I cannot connect, those kinds of messages that we got at a younger age, that at 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 are still running us. Yes, it's to thank the ego and thank it for protecting us and bring ourselves up into who we are today. Because what happens is we haven't grown up that younger self to know who we are in this moment, such that then we can take the step forward into the lives that we want to create. That makes sense?
That's brilliant. I think that's really good. Look, we are, you know, I say this frequently in shows, but we can go on for forever. But don't think we're done, because I've got two very big questions for you that are, I know they're really important concepts with you, and I would like you to sort of flesh these out. And that is the interrelationship with what you call, and you've referred to already, but the bankruptcy of the soul and its opposite, discovering of your zone of genius. How do those two work together, and what do you do with your clients in helping them understand the bankruptcy of the soul and then move on to discovering and enjoying a zone of genius?
What a great question, because the bankruptcy of the soul really started when I was working with executives who have everything on paper. So they have the homes, the cars, the, you know, all the material things, but they had no peace. They were worried. They weren't sleeping. They were worried about their businesses, their children, their families, everything. And so it's this opportunity for us to see that who are we being in the world, not what we're doing. A lot of the work I'm working with them on is, I have a master's in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica, and we work a lot on the soul line or the being line or the waking up line, depending on, you know, so it's
oh, I like the waking not, up. That really yeah. helps the being concept, yeah.
Yes. And so versus the doing line, the, you know, what am I doing every day and how much am I amassing in my life? And so this is an opportunity when I work with people, they're all of my clients, whether they're coaches and consultants that I work with or business owners or executives, I'm always working with who are they being in the world?
What does that mean, Camille? Tell me what that means, being. I hear that a lot, being versus doing, but I don't know that I could really, if I was asked to define what that term means, I don't know that I could do that.
For me, being is about my character, what are my values, how am I congruent? When I was in corporate, one of the things that I struggled with was I was so mission-oriented coming out of the military that I was harsh with people. But I think it's a David White poem that says, you know, we leave 70% of our true selves in the car when we go into work. And
that sounds like David, yeah.
And that really, for me, was that awareness that who I was with my friends and family was this loving, exquisite, fun being. But when I got to work, I was like, you know, so mission-oriented, so cold. And my goal was, how do I be congruent with that? Who am I being 24/7? Am I being loving? Someone asked me today, you know, how did you create a great business as a hermit-level introvert? And I said, because of who I am being in the world and how I show up in my loving and compassion and caring for people. Doesn't mean that I'm not focused and driving towards something, but I can do that from a place of love. I can do that from a place of peace. I can do that from a place of harmony with what matters, and with the zone of genius it pairs, because many people are out of not doing the thing that they wish they could do. Their ego and the voices in their head have told them that they're not enough. They can't do it. They're not smart enough to do that thing. They'll never make money at what it is they want to do. And one of my gifts is monetizing. I love, my clients know, I'll talk about money all the time, and I'll monetize anything. So it's this ability for people to see that if they are not doing a job that they love, there's something out of congruency. Doesn't mean that everything is out. There may be elements, but how do they find a place? They may be yelling at their staff, but that may be just old behavior. And so that bankruptcy of the soul is, I'm out of congruency with who I know myself to be, which is kind, loving, respectful, encouraging. Does that make sense?
That makes, does it make sense? Camille, that's probably the best definition of being I've ever had anybody give me. And, you know, that's not being versus doing is not a new subject for me. But I'm always sort of wondering what being means. And I love that sort of character. Who am I about? Where is my kindness? Where is my compassion? If that is part of me, that may not be part of me, but that happens to be part of Charlie. But does that show itself in my everyday? Is it present in my doing? Is my doing a reflection of my being, or is my doing a reflection of my ego?
Here's another aspect of the being and the soul line and the waking up line is, it's a vertical line. So when we are not in our congruency, if we are fearful, if we are in grief, if we are in worry and disconnection, we are down towards the bottom. And seeing what we're doing comes from, you know, a lower vibration, that fear and worry. The more we are congruent, the more we are in alignment with who we came here to be, where we light up, we are finding meaning in our day, all of that, the higher we go, we have a higher vantage point by which to look at the events on our life. So somebody who's in worry looks at COVID from one place. Somebody who is at peace has a greater creativity to look at it and say, oh, this is an event. It doesn't mean that it's the only, that I have to buy into destruction about it. I could still thrive. How could I thrive? And I'm open to new possibilities in my life.
I'm typing this down now because this is a blog. I'm always looking for things to write on. You seem to me to be drawing a distinction between a very popular concept today, and that's authenticity. And you're drawing a distinction in my mind. What I'm catching here is a distinction between congruence and authenticity. I mean, they come off looking like the same thing, but congruence is a simple way of doing things. It's just, how am I hardwired? Am I living according to my hardwiring? Authenticity, as it begins with, you know, a multiplicity of hardwirings, and which is mine, which is not mine. Am I authentic to this? Am I authentic to that? It's just, you know, it's always such a giant question mark, and congruence doesn't feel like a question mark to me. It feels like this is simply who I am. Just be who I am. And it's obvious, you know, most of us have a clue of our basic character identity. I really love that. Do you see a distinction between those two, or do you see them as synonymous?
Well, no, I love the distinction that you're drawing, and there's one aspect of this congruency that I work with a lot of people on, and that is that who they are being isn't permanent. It's not permanent, and it's not pervasive, meaning I self-identified at times as an introvert, but I'm not really that. If I choose not to be, I don't have to be that. Somebody who yells at their team, they can say, well, that's just the way I am. Well, you get to choose in any moment. It doesn't mean it's not going to be a difficult choice if you have habits of that. It's just unfamiliar for you to do something different. And I bet there are times when you don't yell. And it's that congruency is... The congruency is one line of how am I being congruent with my actions. I put in the authenticity because most people aren't truly in alignment with that unless they're seeking it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. But there's something you said in there that seems to allow... I don't know if I just caught it or if you intended it, but it allows for evolution, that who I am congruent with is an evolving state. Now, who I was congruent with 30 years ago is different than who I am congruent with at 71 years old. There's an evolved me. A changed me, and it's not difficult to access that. All I have to do is attempt to access that. But it is, you know, I'm constantly growing, maturing, changing. Is that part of congruency as well?
Yes, and that goes right. That's absolutely where I was talking, and that goes back to this is the most creative time in history. We are creating and evolving at any given moment. We just had a creation point that we had, you know, more focus point where we have to create. And so this ability to evolve and to see, and we were talking earlier about your birthday, and you know, I come from parents who are both 88. My mother has taught in Africa when she was 81 and 84. And so age in my mind is simply just a number and possibility, because there's so much to live into. She had a teacher, and when she was in her getting her master's in education, who was 90. And so we get to pivot towards whatever we want to create next. We don't have to assume any role, any age, any time in our history and be stuck with it. We can evolve and create our way out of it.
You know, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, we've covered enough for now. We'll have to have a part two, because Kameen, you may be one of the most intelligent guests I've had on the show. You think so creatively, so differently. You know, you have been gifted as sort of almost the gift of a prophet, in that you see what's going on in the world and how we can make it better, and how we can make it better as individuals, and how we can make it better, I'm sure, corporately, is a big part of yours as well, part of your philosophy as well. I want to thank you so much for the time that you've spent with me here today, because I think our listeners will gain so much from you. And I look forward to my personal time of you figuring out, helping me figure out what my next steps are, because I agree with you. You know, I jokingly call myself an old man, but I'm looking at this next decade as being as good a decade as I've ever had in my life. I mean, there are so many, because I'm in a different place. You know, I'm in a more settled place. I'm not trying to prove anything to anybody. I don't feel like I have anything to prove. I just have whatever gifts I have to give and patience that I have to be patient with, you know, and it's a wonderful time. This is a wonderful time of life.
And thank you, Charlie, you know, because being here and having this dialogue is just so fun for me. And it is, I'm excited for this next phase for you too, because it is the most creative time for you, because what you said was, and this is for everyone, it's like the older we get, the less worried we are about what people think.
Truly.
And that's the beauty.
It is.
That's the freedom of getting older.
Yeah. Hopefully that we get that way and we don't go the other way. Well, Kameen Samuel, thank you so much for spending time with me. You are awesome. And I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. Tell your friends, especially tell your friends about this podcast with Kameen, that so many people need to hear this. And as always, until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.